This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A report out today shows that sales of pre-existing homes dropped again. Many sellers have lowered their prices. Foreclosures are up, and new numbers released by Realty Track show that while foreclosures continue at a high rate in Rust Belt states like Ohio and Michigan, there are now lots of clusters in the Sun Belt, in Florida and California, too. So with falling prices, foreclosures on the market, interest rates still relatively low, is this the moment to buy? Is home ownership still the American ideal? Later in the program, Sleeping on the Job is on the opinion page this week. Where do you go to grab a nap at work? But first, to buy or not to buy? If you're debating this question, give us a call. 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email talk at npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blog of the nation. And we begin with Dean Baker, an economist and co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for coming in today.
Thanks for having me on.
And we're right with the proviso, location, location, location. Is this a good time to buy?
Well, I think for the most part, it's probably a very good time to be a renter.
To be a renter, yes.
The basic story is that we've had an unprecedented run-up in housing prices since the mid-90s, interestingly coinciding with the stock bubble. I talk about having a housing bubble alongside the stock bubble, as you had in Japan in the 80s. And what's happened is, if you look since 1995, house prices have risen by about 70% after adjusting for inflation. Now, if we go back in the whole post-war period, house prices had just kept even with the rate of inflation. And Robert Shiller, a very prominent economist at Yale, actually has gone back to the 1890s and finds for that whole century, 1895 to 1995, we have house prices, again, nationwide average, just keeping pace with inflation. So you go, what finally happened in 1995 to suddenly send house prices soaring? And my explanation is that it is a bubble, that it had the sort of predictable consequences you expect to see that we saw in the stock bubble, this irrational exuberance. You get these excesses. We're hearing them now with the subprime market, you know, fraud. We're just at the tip of the iceberg, I'm sure. But the point is, you don't want to buy in when the NASDAQ fell from 5,000 to 3,500. I mean, that was a better deal than 5,000, but it still fell to 1,100. So I think we're maybe NASDAQ 3,500 now, not the best time to get in.
So the stock market may have finished its correction, but not the housing market, you're suggesting.
Basically, that's the story, yes.
So you think it's still going down?
Absolutely. I mean, not everywhere. I mean, we have very big differences in markets. And again, I make the analogy to the stock market. The places that had the biggest run-ups are likely to see the greatest fall. So you'd mentioned a moment ago about how we're starting to see foreclosures rise in pockets of California and Florida. Those were places that had huge run-ups. And of course, there's no foreclosures when if your house is still worth more than you owe on it. It's only once the price starts to come down, as it is now in some of those areas, that you start to see those foreclosures. So those are areas where you're going to see a lot more on the downside. The D.C. area, you'll see a lot more on the downside. Places where you didn't have a big run-up, you know, large chunks of the Midwest, rural areas, you know, you probably don't run any big risk there. So I wouldn't be so cautious. But if you've had a big run-up in your area, odds are prices have a long way to go down.
A long way to go down.
Absolutely. I mean, basically, you know, I can't say for certain that prices will go back to their trend level. And, you know, I'd go back to where I was in the late 90s talking about the stock market.
Right.
I don't know what the proper price-to-earnings ratio was. What I could say was 30 to 1, which is what it hit at its peak. In fact, a little higher. Didn't make sense.
A little too high.
A little too high.
Okay. So the alternative then is to rent. But renting, there's still that feeling that you're throwing money down a hole where it doesn't do you any good.
Yeah, it's interesting. People have that beaten into their head. And, you know, you're throwing much less money down a hole than if you're paying interest in a bank on a house that's going down in value. There's nothing throwing down money a hole more rapidly than that. I mean, think of, you know, just throw some numbers out there. Imagine you buy a house for $300,000. It falls 10% and, you know, you live there for 4 or 5 years. You've lost $30,000 just on the price of the home, not even covering transaction costs and all the interest, which, you know, you're throwing money away in interest as well. It's the same deal.
All right. Elise Glink writes the syndicated newspaper column Real Estate Matters. She also publishes the website thinkglink.com, and she joins us now from her home in Chicago. Nice to have you back on the program.
Nice to be here, Neil.
And what's your opinion? Is this the time to buy?
You know, there's some things that I agree with Dean about, which is that I think that prices are really moderating and dropping a little bit in the places that had the biggest run-up, and you are seeing it in the Rust Belt, you're seeing a tough time for anybody in the state of Michigan. And you could argue they didn't have a run-up. They're just suffering from all kinds of other economic calamities. But Florida, Georgia, the foreclosure markets, those are all tough. And yet today I just got back from going to see a house with a friend who is looking to buy and looking to move. And there are four families circling this one property. And this is in Chicago, where we, you know, have had sort of moderate, good but moderate growth. And you think to yourself, there's always somebody out there who's moving. And so the deal really has to be find the right house at the right price and plan on staying there and not flipping. The whole flipping thing is what's really given this whole buying a house thing a little bit of a bad name. But how long you plan to stay in the house should be the first question you ask before you make your move.
And so that exuberance that we were talking about earlier, the famous reference to the stock market years ago,
sure.
But that was largely infected, you think, by people who are getting into the market either for investment purposes or to buy a house and sell it a year later, flipping.
Well, look what happened the last couple of years. 40% of all homes bought last year were bought by investors or were second home purchases. 40%. If you subtract that out of the total number, you're looking at just people buying houses to live in at being less than what it was even 5 or 8 years ago. And so when you have that kind of ridiculous amount of growth built into a market, that is not self-sustaining in any way, shape, or form. And so I think what we're feeling is part of the effects of people who have bought these properties thinking they're going to flip, make a fortune, be like Donald Trump, except with the hair, and move on. But yet we have a realistic situation now where there aren't enough people necessarily to rent those properties, and people who are investors are suffering and trying to sell, and it's flattening everything out for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Are there situations, Elise Glink, when you could think of circumstances that say you would say you should rent?
Absolutely. In fact, I have an investment property that we're trying to rent right now, so I'm feeling everybody's pain. I'm out there just like everybody else. And we had a woman came to look at it. I thought she'd be the perfect renter, except her dog weighed about 15 pounds more than the limit allowed. And she was the perfect renter. She was moving to a new area, testing out a new job. She already owned a property, a lake house somewhere else that she didn't want to have a second mortgage, didn't know if she was going to like the job or the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
She's a perfect renter. She should not be buying a house. I couldn't have agreed more with her.
So Ms. Tentative should rent. Let me turn back to you, Dean Baker. Can you imagine circumstances under which people should buy?
Well, it really depends a lot where you live. First off, being someone with two big dogs, sometimes you have limited options as a renter. But I'm actually renting and have a very nice landlord who likes my big dogs. But certainly, I mean, it depends on your area. As I say, if you're in an area where you haven't had a big run-up in house prices, then it's likely that you can get a reasonable deal. That's large chunks of the country. On the other hand, large chunks of the country, much of the state of California, you know, in fact, the whole West Coast, most of the East Coast going D.C. north, pockets, Chicago's kind of in the middle there. You have had very large run-ups in prices, and we've just seen the beginning of this correction. We have record numbers of unsold existing homes, new homes, newly built homes. The vacancy rate for ownership units is at a record high by a long margin. There's going to be a lot of downward pressure on price. So I think people are taking a very big risk if they buy in one of these areas that have seen a big run-up in price over the last 10 years.
Let's get some listeners in on this conversation. Our guests are Dean Baker, who's with the Center for Economic and Policy Research, and Elise Glink, a publisher of the website www.thinklink.com. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And let's start with Kari. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, she's calling us from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Go ahead, please.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead.
I was just wondering, I seem to meet so many people that are wanting to either sell a house or buy a house or in the process of doing both, and everybody seems to be just waiting and holding their breath. To what extent are we all just waiting for our neighbor to make a move before we feel comfortable to do it ourselves?
So you want to see whether the neighbor can move the house at the asking price or whether the neighbor has to drop the price or whatever?
Well, right.
Yeah.
If people would just sort of take, you know, bite the bullet and say, okay, I'm willing to just put it out there and take the price correction, would things start moving faster?
Elise Glink, what do you think?
I think things have already happened in that general direction. You are starting to see prices come down. The new numbers from the National Association of Realtors today showed that the average price of a home dropped again about 2%. So you are seeing sellers start to bite the bullet and say, you know what, I just want to move on with my life.
Mm-hmm.
For buyers, that's terrific. Now, real estate agents talk about this being a balanced market, but I'm in agreement a little bit with Dean in that you have the largest number of vacant houses for sale that you've ever had in the history of they've been keeping this silly number. You also have a huge inventory of new construction houses that's come on the market. Developers have been cutting prices very actively. The problem with that for regular, you know, sellers of existing homes is that you have to cut your price to meet the need, you know, meet the market, and the market is now lower for fancier brand new houses. So I do agree with you, Kari, that there is some sort of a who's going to jump off the fence first mentality, but I think that there are opportunities in every pocket for people who are looking for a real deal and really do need to move on with their lives to find the right house at the right price. You just have to look out for it.
Mm. And Dean Baker, I guess that 2% is a nationwide average. 2% on a, say, $300,000, $500,000 house is not going to cause me to change my mind much.
Well, it depends how long you plan to be there. That could be a big loss, you know, if in terms of it going down. But that's right. That is a nationwide average, and there's places where it's falling more than that. You know, some I was just looking at the data, the Washington, D.C. area, in fact. By one index, it's fallen almost 5% over the last year. So it's in the process of coming down, but I think it's got a lot more to go.
And what about Kari's question about should, when you're in a particular market, wait for somebody else to jump first, or should you be the one to try to set the market?
Well, I wouldn't think about trying to set the market. I mean, again, you have to take your best guess, and, you know, if you're listening to me and you're thinking that the prices are likely to fall, you probably want to run out and sell. The last thing on earth you want to do is buy. But again, if you think otherwise, you know, if you're confident that prices will stabilize or maybe start to head up, well, I wouldn't tell someone to wait then if that's what you believe.
And Kari, what's the situation been like there in Sioux Falls?
I would say it's very slow. You know, like I said, it just seems like everybody's sort of waiting to see what the next person's going to do. So nobody wants to take the hit.
And are you waiting to sell or waiting to buy?
Well, we're sort of waiting to sell.
All right. Well, good luck.
All right. Thank you.
All right. We're going to continue taking calls after a short break, talking about the housing market. Dean Baker, economist and co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, is with us here in Studio 3A. Elise Glink, the author of the nationally syndicated newspaper column Real Estate Matters, joins us from Chicago. If you'd care to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, though, to buy or not to buy, the news for home sellers has been bad for months, making for a down market with falling prices in many cities. But is it a good time now to buy? The old adage still rules. Location, location, location. We'll head to the Sun Belt in a few minutes. Our guests are Dean Baker, an economist and co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, and Elise Glink, who writes the syndicated column Real Estate Matters and publishes the website thinkglink.com. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And you can read what other listeners have to say at our blog, npr.org/blog of the nation. Here's an email from Janet in Florida, something buyers like me in Florida are also dealing with: a huge tax increases, inequitable taxes. New buyers end up paying a much larger share of property tax than people in homes for 20 years. And of course, skyrocketing insurance premiums. It's not just the economy for us. It's also those factors. So that's an important thing to think about. Let's see if we can get another caller in on the line. This is Ann. Ann's with us from Gresham in Oregon.
Hi. I'm looking to buy a house probably within the next year. I currently rent at about $675. I've got a two-bedroom duplex, and I'm going to use it as an office space, and then I'm going to go and find a place, right? But I've been looking for probably 7 years to buy a home, and for me, the housing costs here are finally stabilizing within the Multnomah County area.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen houses go as high as $329,000 for nothing more than a small bungalow that you would find on the East Coast, back down to now $199,000, $249,000. That's a reasonable drop.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when you look at the building materials, you're paying for what you get, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're not seeing something that's unreasonable.
So
I've got a friend who's like, oh, no, you can go lower. He's always going lower, and then you get substandard housing.
So you think the things are fair about now?
I think that you're going to get what you pay for.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I think it's about time to actually acknowledge that if you've got a brick house, that's a good investment.
It's a good investment.
It's always going to be a good investment, and location is huge.
Yeah, of course. Location is paramount.
It's everything.
What do you think of Ann's logic, Dean Baker?
Well, if you've seen houses fall in price, then, you know, a lot. I mean, what you described there, you know, I don't know how typical that is, but if you've actually seen a house fall 30, 40%, and, you know, still, you know, it's in good shape. It wasn't hugely overpriced, you know, relative to the market previously. Then, you know, then that might be a situation which would make sense to buy. But, you know, just the one thing I would say is housing is not always a good investment. A lot of people have taken a very big hit on housing. And, you know, I'll just go back to the 90s when it was just, you know, people would speak it like it was the absolute gospel truth that the stock market always went up over any long period. Sorry, that's just not true. I don't care what, you know, your investment advisor told you. You can lose money on housing.
You were talking about the stock market there, too.
Yeah, well, yeah. No, I mean, yeah. I was saying back in the 90s, that was, you know.
Hearing that in the 90s, stock market would always go up.
Or, you know, hold it for 10
sometimes
years,
it
don't go
down.
Up, and
right.
That's not necessarily true.
Not necessarily true. Any advice, Elise Glink?
You know, I think one thing you have to remember is that there are a lot of people moving to the United States every year, and a lot of those people are looking to buy a house and do buy a house within the first 3 years of living in this country. There's a tremendous drive for the immigrant population to become homeowners in this country. And we've made it very easy for them and for all of us with loose and interesting credit policies. But, you know, in most cases, it works out. So when you know that people are moving to an area, that's a really good sign that prices are eventually going to find their level. They're going to stabilize. And then I think they're going to move ahead in terms of, you know, states like Michigan, where there's a really or even South Florida, where there's underlying structural problems. That's an area where I think that Dean's assessment is probably right. There's could be years before Michigan works its way out. I mean, it's all depending on the car market. So I think for you, you know, Anne, that I think you want to take a look at what the neighborhood is.
Right, absolutely.
And absolutely take a look at how long you plan to be there. If
and that's the thing. Right now I'm looking at, you know, this is it. This is going to be the home till I die.
Okay, you're going to be buried in the basement. I know a lot of people like that.
Yeah.
I think then if that's the case and you sound young, so you got a few years ahead of you, I don't think it much matters whether you buy now and then prices drop another 5% or you buy in 2 years and prices are up 3%.
Right, I think what matters. Right, this is my great-grandchildren's home, you know, that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, so you buy a house that you can put your money in and you keep going forward. Dean makes a good point. Don't think you're necessarily going to make a fortune on it, but if you want a place to live and this is what you want to do, you're going to be there for the long haul.
Yeah.
I think there's very little downside risk.
Also, in that situation, you have plenty of time to look around. So
that
you know,
is very true. That's,
you know, find one you like.
Thank you.
With a nice soft basement.
Those dirt basements, ever popular dirt basement.
Thank you for my call. Bye.
Okay, thanks very much, Ann. Let's see if we can get. This is David. David's with us from Somerville, Massachusetts.
Hello.
Hi.
My question is to your guests regarding neighborhoods versus the overall area. I recently just purchased a condo, my first condo, in Somerville, Massachusetts.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. And my rationale for that was even though all around Cambridge and Somerville there's plenty of for sale signs and prices going down, in my particular neighborhood being very close to Harvard University and very close to a T-stop, a subway station, prices seem to be quite stable, and I feel confident, even though my timeline is about 3 to 5 years. In addition to that, I found that anything comparable for renting would only be just a couple hundred dollars shy of owning. And I wonder if your guests could comment on that relationship of high rental price to this risk.
Elise Glink, there are going to be places like David is talking about.
I drove around Boston all weekend. I was driving my kids up to camp in Maine, and so I was driving around Newton, and I'm driving around Cambridge, and I'm thinking to myself, gosh, has Cambridge ever had a price dip? Because really, you know, what do you have? One of the great universities of the world based right there with a very little available land to build on. You've got a tremendous amount of demand for the whole, you know, being close to Harvard and renting and buying. I think when you're at a price differential of $100 or $200 between renting and owning, I'd own any day of the week. I think the risk that you take is a bigger, you know, you get a bigger bang for your buck. If for no other reason, the $100 more that you're paying is probably what you're at least paying down in your loan every month. And if not, it's a couple of $100, you know, it's extra money that you're sort of building in equity. So I would take the risk for $100 or $200 differential. Now, that said, if you could rent for $695 a month versus owning for $2,000 a month, I'd probably rent, take the money, shove it into my 401k and hope for a return to the 90s of the stock market.
I'd look at that rent versus own difference. I mean, that's, again, one of the reasons why I've been so convinced there has been a housing bubble over the last decade, because rental prices actually have barely outpaced inflation over this decade. Again, there's differences region by region. But, you know, if you look since 95, rents have outpaced inflation by maybe 7, 8, 9%, whereas, again, house sale prices have outpaced inflation by 70%. Now, I can't speak for Somerville. I don't know that area. But the one point I would make there is that, you know, the idea that even though it might be a very, very good, very desirable area and presumably still will be 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now, that doesn't mean prices can't get out of line. And again, just making the analogy to the stock market, you could look at companies like General Electric, Microsoft, good companies, profitable companies that, you know, are still very profitable. They still lost a lot of value. So that's not an absolute guarantee. I'd still urge caution.
David, good luck.
Thank you very much.
Joining us now is Ben Jones. He blogs about the effects of the price boom for his website, thehousingbubbleblog.com, and he joins us from his home in Sedona, Arizona. Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you, Neil.
And Sedona, Arizona, is that one of those places in Arizona that has just boomed the last decade?
Yes, it did. Actually, I think in the first part of 2005, the median price went up 60%, just in, I believe, 4 months.
In 4 months?
Right.
And what's happening now?
Well, like much of the country, we've got way too much supply on the market, buyers are hesitant, and we're starting to see foreclosures.
And are prices dropping as well?
I think they are, not the official numbers, but that's because of the flaws in the median, the statistics.
When you say not the official numbers, what do you mean?
Well, the numbers that come from the realtors' organization.
Ah, so they might want to keep the price looking artificially high, and they might want to sell a little lower.
I don't think they're purposefully manipulating it. No, I think it's just a flaw in the median. Whenever a market's in transition, the statistic, and even the California realtors are admitting that now, that prices are really falling, but the median isn't.
The median price isn't.
That's correct. The statistic isn't.
So that means that lower valued prices are selling more than higher?
It's the
other way around.
The other way around.
All right. This is why I'm in radio and I don't teach arithmetic. So I'm wondering at this point, what are people saying on your blog about buying or renting?
Well, the folks are pretty happy that they've made the choices that they've made and that they're not in the same boat as some of their neighbors and friends that bought at the peak.
So the people who bought at peak are, these are the people who are being exposed to foreclosure, you would
think? That's correct, yeah. I think on record levels, actually.
Record levels. Well, Sedona is one of those places that's so new, it's almost everything's a record, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but we haven't seen a ton of foreclosures here. It's a fairly affluent second home market. But down in Phoenix, it's building up pretty big. And it's, even in the Midwest, I think the Mortgage Bankers Association came out and said that foreclosures in Ohio, Michigan, and Indiana were higher than the Texas. The numbers in Texas during the bust in the 80s.
Mm.
That's pretty shocking, I think.
So at this point, if people are going on your blog to talk about buying or renting, what are you telling them?
Well, I don't make recommendations, but I think that the consensus is that rents are wildly out of line with home prices. In some cases, buying a home is twice as much. And another thing people need to consider about the rents is, what kind of loans are we talking about? Are they actually paying any principal down? And if you're only paying interest only, you're really just renting it forever from the bank.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much, Ben.
Thank you.
Ben Jones blogs about the effects of the price boom for his website, thehousingbubbleblog.com, and he was talking to us today from his home in Sedona, Arizona. Let me introduce our guest, Dean Baker, an economist and co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, here with us in Studio 3A, Elise Glink, publisher of the website www.thinkglink.com, 800-989-8255, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-TALK. And let's get Jim on the line. Jim is with us from Traverse City in Michigan.
Hello.
Hi, Jim. Go ahead, please.
I'm an appraiser in Traverse City, Michigan.
Uh-huh.
And I've been doing this for an awful long time. I also sold real estate for 15 years back in the 80s and the 70s. I think one of the big problems is a lot of people that have bought houses within the last 10 years have never gone through a bad time. And the other thing is that I think there are a lot of shady mortgage companies that sold a lot of these people a bill of goods, and with 125% mortgages and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're seeing the ramifications of that now, where we're seeing values go down and people losing their houses because they made this bad mistake 5 years ago. There's a lot of balloons coming due now, and it just is, it's just affecting our whole market. Second thing, we're about 250 miles. We're in a resort community right on Lake Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And we're about 250 miles north of Detroit, and Detroit's problems are drastically affecting us because there's a lot of second homes up here that the first thing these people in Detroit, if they've lost their jobs, first thing they want to do is sell their house, and that's creating such a glut that there's a lot of reduction in values and asking prices and time on the market time on the market, it's not atypical to see a house be on the market for 2 years before it'll sell.
Two years.
I'm putting in my every one of my appraisals now, the original list price and the number of days on the market for every appraisal that I do, because occasionally we do get a call from an unhappy customer now because their value is going down. And, of course, it's everybody's house but mine. Values are going down.
Right,
and,
of course.
This is evidence I can show them right on the report where, there's drastic reductions in the asking price and what the accepted offers are. Mm. And, of course, when you look in your local paper, you don't see that. All you see is what the house is listed at. You don't see what the end accepted price is. Mm. So I guess that's my comment about this area in Michigan. Michigan's economy is very bad right now.
Jim, we'd heard that, and thanks very much for that report. We appreciate it.
Okay.
Elise?
You know, Neil, I have to say he's absolutely right. Jim is absolutely right about one thing. Not only are most people who live in homes today, who have just bought in the last 10 years, they're not familiar at all with the down market. The real estate agents, the vast majority of all real estate agents practicing out there, have never been through a down market. They've been in the business less than 10 years. And so you've got 700,000-800,000 agents out there who don't know how to deal with it, aren't properly preparing their sellers for it. And sellers only remember what happened 2 years ago and why is in my house selling in 5 minutes with six bids. And so I think that really a favor that the National Association of Realtors could do is to really push some lessons out there for everybody and to get their member agents really up to speed on what it's like to sell in a very, very slow market. Again, its pockets of the country are doing fine. A lot of the country is slowed down. And so you really, if you don't prepare your sellers mentally, they're never going to jump off the fence.
Elise Glink and Dean Baker are with us. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get one last caller on the line. And this is Alex. Alex calling from Miami in Florida.
Hey, how are you guys?
Hi.
I just wanted to know from the panel, I got a question. I know everybody's making money. The richer people have better chances of buying one, two, homes and making money off that, and then the poor people or the intermediate people don't really have that luxury or that chance. Will it make a difference if they would make a law to where they would say, okay, if you're a resident of Florida, you're allowed to buy houses here. If you don't live in the state, you're not allowed to buy houses here. Would that give a chance to other people that are actually trying to get a house?
Would it lower housing prices in general, are you suggesting?
Well, not necessarily lowering house prices, because if you lower the house prices, the rich are still going to keep buying more house, and they're able to raise the price on whoever they want to rent it to.
I think
I'm trying to get at, let's say...
Are you talking about houses for investment or things like that?
Right.
Second houses?
Right. People live off that a lot, and then the poor people that can't do that, they're stuck. So what I would, if it was up to me, I would say, okay, do you live in the States? Do you live in Florida? Okay, you're able to buy a house here.
Right.
If you don't live here, why are you buying a house here? You know, when there's people here already that need houses.
Well, let's get a chance for a response. Dean Baker, you might have problems with the Constitution, but does he make economic sense?
Well, I mean, the advantage would be by lowering price. That is what will make it easier for lower-income people to buy the houses there. And, you know, if you could have some effective bar on people from outside the state buying those houses, you would lower prices, and that would make it easier for the people living in the state to buy them. Again, there's all sorts of, you know, legal issues. There's other reasons why you probably wouldn't want to do that. It'd be very difficult. You give me a law like that, I'll find you 100 ways around it, and you have people much smarter than me who'll find you 1,000 ways around it.
So governor might not like it. All those people who spend 3 or 4 months a year in Florida spend a lot of money in Florida, too.
That's right. And you'll get people gaming because you have to say, okay, well, when do you live there? Do you have to spend 12 months? No. You know, do you have to spend 8 months, 6 months, whatever it is? You'll find, you know, you'll put down some number and then you'll find people that will find a way to game that.
Mm-hmm.
I personally think those are the people that should rent, the people that don't live here. The people that live in the state should be able to afford a home.
All right. Elise Glink, can you give him 20 seconds worth of advice before we've got to go?
You know, some states already have taken this into account. You have states like Michigan, not to pick on Michigan, but if you're buying a second house, you pay one tax rate for real estate property taxes. If you live in state, you'd pay a different rate. Many states have adopted these kinds of measures around the country. But honestly, Florida depends so much on its tourism industry. You kill that, you're going to kill a lot more there.
Thanks very much for the call, Alex. And Elise Glink, as always, thanks very much for your time.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Neil.
Elise Glink is a publisher of the website www.thinkglink.com. She joined us from her home. And also our thanks to Dean Baker, economist and co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research here in Studio 3A. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
And when we come back from a short break, an argument that a little nap time at work is a good thing. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.